This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Darren Moser, sitting in the center chair this week. I'm joined by my co-host, Daniel Prue, who's sitting in red at the con. Daniel, it's almost time for your, you know, yearly eval. Are you happy at the ship's navigator?
Look, I have to tell you, with the incline at like 45 degrees back, I can just kind of sit. I can, you know, I put my sunglasses on. I don't have to open my eyes. I can kind of just sleep here. This is like my job. I can just relax. Just leave me where I am. I'm really comfortable where I don't have to do any actual work.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a negative crew evaluation here on the Enterprise D, so you must be doing a good job. So, well, also, down in engineering is Chief Engineer Philip Gilfus. Philip, I'm detecting a plasma leak in a crawl space down there. Could you go repair that?
Plasma leak? Quick, evacuate engineering! Evacuate engineering! Okay, I've been doing a good ab workout. I think I'm going to be able to do this good. All right, here I go. Okay. All right, that was a good barrel roll. Whew.
Very good, very good. Okay, you lived to tell another tale. Well, in this episode of Earl Grey, we are going to be discussing our favorite engineer of the 1701D, Geordi LaForge.
Argyle.
Oh, Argyle?
Actually, we're doing Argyle? I think Geordi went in and redacted Argyle's file from, you know, all previous records, and so okay, maybe they have like a little plaque, you know, down in engineering, and it's got all the names of the engineers, but they're written really, really small, and then it's based on how long you've done the job, is the font size of your name. So Geordi LaForge is like font 20, Argyle's like font 2.
I always thought it was Lieutenant Commander Leland T. Lynch, Warp Corps Memorial.
The Warp Corps Memorial. Well, because he was trying to mount the plaque on the warp core, and you don't want to do that. It doesn't respond well to drywall screws. Let's just leave it at that. But I first wanted to start out with, what are our first impressions on Geordi LaForge? This is a formal report, so Philip, what are your first thoughts on this member of the crew?
Well, you know, this is one of the things about Geordi, you know, being the chief engineer, because, you know, when I first started watching The Next Generation, it was the third or the fourth season, so I kind of always knew him as the chief engineer. So it was sort of interesting to go back and be like, oh, he was the con officer in red? Oh, that's, he was on the bridge the whole time? Interesting. So it's almost like this, like, sort of prequel you never knew about, at least from my perspective. So, but no, I think, In some ways, I think Geordi is one of those characters that, you know, we'll talk about, that people sort of criticize for not having much to do throughout the series. So I certainly liked him, but you know, did we ever know the real Geordi?
That's true. I think, haven't you written a piece or two about changing from red to gold? Don't worry, we'll get to that later. But Daniel, what are your first thoughts on this dynamic character?
You know, I remember as a kid, there are a few characters that I was always kind of drawn towards, and Data was one of them, and Geordi was one of them. I don't know if it's because they were like BFFs forever, but I actually really always liked Geordi, and I don't remember particularly well the transition between Con Officer Geordi and Chief Engineer Geordi, but I just remember always being like, you know, this is kind of a guy that he's cool and hip. And now that I'm older and watching him, I'm like, wow, this guy is such a huge dork. Like, he can't get anything right. But I don't know. There's just something endearing about the character. I don't know if it's... I think it's probably the way that LeVar Burton plays him. Because I think LeVar Burton is like a really likable human being. So like even when you watch Jordy kind of stumble and be like, the file didn't say you were married. Like it's still like... you still kind of like him. And you, yeah, right. And you still kind of root for him. So it's like... I like Jordy. I always have. There's nothing to not like about him. You kind of always want to root for him, whatever the situation is.
Well, it's probably the Jordy laugh that no matter what he does, Jordy laughing, the LeVar Burton laugh. Exactly. It's just so infectious and just makes everyone's day seem better.
It is. He's got a great, great laugh and just a wonderful grin. He's just... you know, I think once, and you know, he pulled off that kind of crew cut look really well. I mean, it doesn't look militaristic. It looks, you know, because that's really hard to do. Future sci-fi hair, as advocated by Troy, sometimes future sci-fi hair is kind of hard to pull off. But as we've already been alluding to, we're going to now talk about Geordi's shift from red to yellow, his shift from command to engineering. So first, we do see Geordi in command. I think it's all of season one, right? It's the beginning of season two that he gets that promotion.
Right.
But there are some great times he has at the command chair. I mean, one of his highest moments is Arsenal of Freedom, where he's basically... put in charge, sitting in that center chair, and he comes up with a plan. He separates the saucer. He takes the battle bridge, you know, the battle section back, and uses the atmosphere to detect the, you know, the cloaked probe. And he's like, I mean, I'm always the first to say, oh man, if Data's ever in command, boy, that's a great episode. But you know, those few times we got Geordi in command, he rocked it.
And the good thing about Geordi, he was kind and rewound the tape on the battle bridge for the AV club guy so that the next person wanted to see what mission happened. You know, that's always the good, polite thing to do.
That's true. Isn't it like a secondary bridge simulator, you know, in its off hours when it's not being used?
No, it's totally true. Cause I, as you alluded to, have written an entire article about this, where Geordi functions very much about all the folks who went from red to yellow in Next Generation.
Yeah, some went back.
and I know I've talked about this before, so I won't go on and on and on. But yes, I think when I went back in my rewatch currently, but other times, and seeing Geordi in red, I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy really had command potential. And in my article, I kind of compare him to Lieutenant Sulu, that in the original series, you know, a lot of times Scotty was in command, but Sulu was kind of like the second or the third officer, if you will. And then, of course, we eventually see Sulu get the Excelsior. And I think with Geordi, you saw that possibility that you showed him in command in red. And even a few times in engineering being in command, because he's in command of engineering, and even he was in command of Mr. Scott with Scotty as his chief engineer in Relics. And so, you know, there was an alternate reality in Voyager where he became a captain, Geordi did. But yeah, I definitely thought, like, you know, it would have been cool to have him in red one more season. Like season two, just keep him in red. Two seasons of red, and then five in yellow, and I think that would have been cool, just to still see him on the bridge doing the thing there.
You know, and the thing is, too, like, I don't know if I necessarily agree with keeping him in red beyond season one. But...
Geordi in red!
And one thing I do have to say about Arsenal of Freedom, it is the earliest example. Like TNG is very, like, intermittent about the competency of some of its characters, but we get a really strong Troy episode, like an actual, like, hey, I'm going to be a counselor and I'm going to help Geordi along with his command in that episode. And she really encourages him. And you know, that's besides the point, cause we're doing Geordi, but I just wanted to mention that.
No, that's a good point. I mean, she actually earns her seat next to the captain during that, yeah. That mission.
But, no, I mean, like, you're right. Like, In the original series, we see Scotty, like, he's right behind Spock in command of the Enterprise. And we don't get that sense, like, I think throughout later TNG that Geordi's next in line behind Picard and Riker.
Data.
And then even Data, like, that's what I mean. Like, he, like,
yeah,
he's,
I think,
like,
he's fourth.
Fourth or fifth or maybe even sixth in line, because he's not commander. We have two other commanders that are above him. And, like, but it's like, no, earlier on in the series, we actually get to see, like, if Geordi was in command, he's a pretty competent guy. He knows what he's doing. You know, he's earned his place, and he could probably handle being in that center seat for a little while.
Yeah, and I think another thing, not only does he show command potential, I think the cool setup of season one, again, watch season one, not all of it, but like 70% of season one, is that whole Data Geordi dynamic. Cause you're like the whole, like, oh, they're friends. Well, this is the reason why they just make it up. But season one, they're sitting next to each other the whole time. And, you know, they're
bridge
buddies.
It's like in PE when, you know, you have your name and so you're on number 8 and then whoever sits next to you at 16, cause that's, you know, you go down two rows and they end up being your best friend. That actually happened to me. So, exactly.
That last name is just a letter apart or something. But yeah, and also Geordi, and I've said this before, so I won't go into it, but is the smart aleck of Next Generation, because we get that on the bridge during season one. He's the one that's always giving some smart aleck remark to kind of, you know, relieve the tension and be the funny guy and to tell Ferengi jokes. You know, that's his job. And so once he moves down to main engineering, you don't really get that as much humor as you got from him that first season.
No, but it definitely makes sense of why they added that engineering station at the back of the bridge to get him back up there, because otherwise we'd like never see him. But, well, although moving to be, you know, the chief engineer did have some perks for Commander, you know, Lieutenant Commander LaForge, like meeting Scotty. I'm sure that was a huge bucket list item.
Oh,
he didn't even realize.
Oh, yeah, because he was so good about that.
Hey, he
I think he reacted
really
to him
enjoy that.
He reacted to him the same way he reacted to Barclay, like, do I have to?
Or Ensign Gomez.
Yes, Mr. LaForge, you have to.
Or almost anybody else that shows up in engineering. He actually is really, really short with people that interfere with his work.
Well, he's a typical engineer. Uh-oh, I've just alienated half our audience.
Well, he also got to meet Dr. Zephyrin Cochran, you know, another famous, you know.
Wait, Darren, did you know he went to Zephyrin Cochran High School?
Oh, yeah, I don't think he should have told him that. I think that made him run into the woods. And he also got to meet Samuel Clemens. I mean, we're forgetting all the emotional impact that
we don't.
He had.
Let's not.
Well, no. You know, Geordi is actually, and I'm going to say this, someone correct me, is the most promoted person in the Next Generation.
Oh, he promotes so fast. Yeah, he starts as lieutenant junior grade in 2354, which is the first year, the first season. Next year, he's promoted to lieutenant, and as he's the chief engineer. And then the year after that, he makes lieutenant commander. So basically, I mean, this is probably the real reason he was transferred off the bridge, because he probably would have usurped Riker and gotten the Titan within another 2 years. He was on the fast track. I mean, around Riker, Riker's going to look like he's just standing still.
So let's be fair then. In Star Trek canon, aside from Wesley, who went from civilian to God,
to acting as
is he not the most promoted character in all of Star Trek? Because we actually see him go from lieutenant junior grade to captain in, like, what?
Alternate future Voyager.
10 years, maybe? Maybe even less than that. So
no.
Yeah,
a little more, but yeah,
maybe 15. But pretty,
because
I mean,
from Encounter to Nemesis was 10 or 11 or 12 years. So.
Yeah, and remember, even in the Voyager, that was
like,
oh,
you're
future,
right, it was
Voyager,
in the future. Yeah, you're right.
Because they had taken
right.
many years to get back, or
like
or
Harry
to
had actually gotten a promotion. So you know that was like way in the future.
Yeah,
like way.
I mean,
like
he,
we're all dead.
Well, that's
he,
the JJ
he
verse.
Lieutenant Junior, yeah. Which is funny because he'd be Lieutenant Junior Grade, which is
where Geordi would have started. Yeah.
So, well, one of the other defining aspects of Geordi LaForge is his visor.
Wait, what? And,
yeah, I know it's an amazing amazing piece of technology. I'm surprised
you didn't
notice it.
Is that what that was? I just thought it was a... Oh, well, that explains
It's not just
that.
A headband. It's not a future fashion to take a headband instead of wearing it, you know, above your head to wear it in front of your face.
I thought he was in Devo. He's not?
No. But so this the writers did have a little bit of fun with this, you know, prop, as it were. I mean, from the visual acuity transmitter we see used once, which could have been used oh so many times later, but where I guess maybe it's because he had to add like a salt shaker sized cube to the side of his face in order for this thing to transmit. I mean, hey, we can have a communicator the size of a poker chip that can go from the planet to the ship, but we can't transmit a video signal, you know, a kilometer without strapping a deck of cards to my ear.
Now, is this the next generation's version of Deep Space Nine's holographic communicator?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, but there were a lot of...
We're just going to show it once and, yeah, never mind.
There are a lot of problems with the holographic communicator, though, because you live in a world where someone could beam over. It's like if you blink, oh, hey, look, how did that Admiral get here? I thought he was back at Starfleet. Oh, he's standing in the blue box. That must mean he's not really here.
He's in timeout. No, I thought it was interesting that apparently Data's an angel, because he's just white light, according to Geordi. What, isn't that how everyone sees him?
It's like, no, yeah, you'd think he would have realized that he sees things way different, you know, in the 30 plus odd years he'd probably lived at that point.
Go ahead, Daniel.
I was going to say, let's be fair, he does actually see Data in all of his normal white glory in the first season Q episode when he's granted sight by Riker, so.
And he says, Data, you're so beautiful, just as I imagined you would
like
be.
You're like I imagined you. That's true, that's right, because there's no one else in the room he would have said that to.
Who else would even said that to? That doesn't make any sense. You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, this is this is one of those things that I think, you know, we take for granted. But, like, you know, this was, I think, born out of 80s political correctness. Like, hey, we need someone with a disability on Star Trek. Like, you know, that's... You know, we need someone who's represented, you know, because that was the whole thing with the original series coming out of that. You know, we had this, what do they call it, Starship Earth, you know, where you have all the people of Earth represented on that bridge. And so, okay, now we're to the 80s, we're doing this again. You know, we're not, I mean, we were, but at least in making the show, we're not as race conscious. Obviously, cultural still is and still is today. But anyway, but okay, we're going to have someone with a disability. And so we're going to have a blind person. And of course, the irony is we're going to have a blind person flying the ship. You know, which I think Deep Space Nine tried to think about doing that with the didn't go with that, because I think she was planned to be a regular. But anyways, but that's sort of a very interesting dynamic that, you know, for a lot of folks who have disabilities, they never saw themselves on Star Trek. But here you have a guy who's blind.
I think actually Geordi's name, LaForge, actually, I think came from a fan who was in a wheelchair. I'm pretty sure I've heard that in reliable sources. So yeah, there's always been a strong connection to representing that diverse aspect of the future in Geordi's character.
Yeah, and like, you know, not to be offensive or anything like that, but it's just like I feel like Roddenberry just got this. He thought this was like a brilliant idea. Like, we'll have a blind guy drive the ship, and like it'll be great. And it's just like, okay, like I see what you did there. Or whatever, but obviously the character had to grow beyond that initial, you know what I mean, like just that initial idea, which he did, and I think he became a very strong character.
Well, it comes down to the question of, like, why again didn't we have a series regular as a chief engineer season one? I mean, that I was kind of surprised that they never cast that.
Did. It was the same kind of irony. They had engineers who didn't know how to be an engineer, so it was kind of a running gag, and it didn't work.
Oh, it's
what are you saying about
funny.
Argo? Exactly, Philip. I mean, you have a problem.
Okay, he's named
or...
after a sock. I just can't take that man seriously. I'm sorry. I can't.
I want us to name all of them. We've only named two. There's like five in season one. But anyway, there's the woman. There's
the woman. Way to show your 21st century ethics,
there's,
Philip.
There's
woman.
There was only
there's
one woman.
Black guy. There's Irish guy.
And they walk into the 10 forward. Never mind. Because then they had the guy in Arsenal of Freedom, the chief engineer who...
Oh, douchebag man?
Yeah, that Lieutenant LaForge slapped around. So, yeah. Anyway. But yeah, the whole... Because I think there are... I mean, I couldn't even name them all. There's probably at least, I'd say, five episodes where they encounter an alien culture that would have killed a blind person in their society, and Geordi ends up saving the planet, and he's like, well, how about them apples?
Romulans! So,
well, I can't remember all, like, even, I'm blanking on them. I know, just shout them out, fans, shout them out, because there's like five episodes where it's like, oh, we would have killed you because you're in perfection. Well,
there's Romulans, there's the Masterpiece Society,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's quite a handful, and they do use that, but it doesn't feel overused. I mean, they tooted
it
a couple times, and then they put it down. So,
although we do remember the very novel time that the blind guy met the deaf guy, right? Like, that's a very a significant event that happens in TNG.
Well, that episode was Loud as a Whisper. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, but Picard, you know, definitely was a strong connection to Geordi, though. It's not screen canon, but they do have some pieces that reflect how Picard was responsible for getting Geordi positioned on the hood, where, you know, he had some, you know, promotion abilities, and Geordi kind of ingratiated himself to Picard after, I think, he basically reworked a whole engine assembly on a shuttle after Picard made an offhand remark of it not performing up to spec, and he's like, that's when I knew I wanted to serve with that man. Not make him chief engineer, but put him where I could see him, right in the front. You know, that's how much I trusted him.
Now, one thing we have not talked about was Geordi's additional duty, which I don't, you know, if you're in the military or at least in the army, you have additional duties that you're assigned. You know, you're this, but you're also going to be like, you know, assigned as like the evaluations guy. You always have an additional duty,
is
right?
Is he look
right
out the window sensor
you,
guy?
He is look out the window sensor guy. So it's like, oh no, Geordi, the sensors aren't working. What are we going to do? Geordi, could you look out a window and tell us what's happening?
Okay.
Boy, there was a window on this bridge. Well, there is the dome, I guess, above them, but that's kind of aimed at the wrong direction.
There was no window on the, like, he couldn't even go to like the ready room. Like, could you go to the observation lounge and just radio us what's happening?
It's behind us, sir. Could you turn the ship around? Because I can't see.
I thought you were, when you were saying that Geordi had extra, you know, duties, I thought you were going to go for the data repairman. I thought that's the angle that you were going for there.
Yeah, you would think there would be a leading, you know, cyberneticist, you know, like on board to help maintain this. And nope, let's just have him, you know.
What do you mean Dr. Crusher friends. Works on data?
No, only one person in the whole galaxy can know anything about androids. And nobody
Dr.
else
Crusher.
Is allowed to understand anything about them. So
she was the first one to know where his off switch was the medical doctor.
Well, if you, Philip, if you had an off switch, would you not want to keep it hidden as well?
Right. Except
it's like
when
a self-destruct button. I would just take it off.
Except when I put it in the computer
that
system.
Component.
And Commander Riker looked it up on the computer, which apparently was free for everyone to look up by themselves.
Okay, he did have a high security access, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
No. That was Datapedia.
Well, it's, yeah, but that's, well, that's yeah. True, although we did have, I think in later, I'm thinking of my favorite book in the ever, Ship of the Line. In Ship
Take
of the
drink,
Line,
they do
mention that they have to take out Data and they are able to have some of his specs, and that's how they figure out how to disable him. And they're like, the Federation's too proud of their android, so they freely share, you know, how to disable him. So,
well, it's an insurrection. They have to do that.
That's true. As we've seen, even though he gets to see the electromagnetic spectrum, he can cheat at cards. His visor does have a few drawbacks. Brainwashing would come to mind. He's apparently a very, you know, he's either the covert agent who's going to kill the ambassador or the eye in the sky for the Klingon Empire to, basically, he just doesn't have a good track record. I don't think Worf would ever let him join security. Let's just put it that way. I mean, you'd think, hey, he's like RoboCop. His, you know, vision could be admissible as evidence. Nope, he's actually the biggest security threat roaming the halls of the Enterprise D.
And let's be fair here, because his visor is what doesn't allow him to take showers either, right? Like, because, you know, he's the, well, whatever. It doesn't matter. Go ahead, Philip. What were you
Wait,
say?
24th century and that thing can't be waterproof? I'm just saying.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is apparently he shaves. I'm not sure how, but he does. He even does it the old-fashioned way, because when Data gives him... I've never understood that episode where it's like, Geordi, you're not using the special, you know, razor, electric razor, whatever it's called, you know, I've gave you. And Geordi's like, I like to do it the old-fashioned way. I'm like, well, if you give me a razor that's modern and does the job faster, why would I not use it? I don't get that.
It's like a sonic razor or whatever the heck it is.
Now, Geordi did try to... He did have a beard for a little bit, right?
He did, because LeVar Burton actually wanted to grow it out for his wedding, and so they let him keep it for a couple episodes in real life.
I think everyone got a chance at the beard, right? Data?
Data had a beard.
Riker,
Picard had his little beard in Hollow Pursuit.
Yeah. No, Wesley, though. Wesley never got a beard.
Well, he really...
Well, he has a beard now.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. So, he has an epic one. So
gets McFadden, not so much.
She dyed it in First Contact.
No Barkley beard.
Wasn't pretty.
No Barkley beard. But, well, and although, again, his visor is supposed to be able to see all this stuff. Okay, so follow with me. So he can see X-rays. He can see gamma rays. He can, although he couldn't quite see that plasma fire that was about to erupt in the cargo bay. But, you know, besides that, he supposedly sees all these different things, yet in Generations, when he's taken captive and his visor is tuned so that the Klingons can pick it up, it projects perfect 1080p you and me see vision straight to the Klingons. Riddle me that. How does that work?
That you see in the episode of TNG where we actually get to see through the visor, the Enterprise D didn't Heart have the right. It didn't have the right codec.
Oh, it's a codec issue.
Yes, and then the Lursa and Bator's ship did have the right, so they could actually see it in normal vision.
I thought there was like a set of dip switches on the side, and he just didn't realize if he put like number 2 down and number 5 up, boom, I could see just like everyone else. I mean, his whole life, it's kind of sad. No one had the heart to tell him. Because it just, as year after year ticked by, just got more and more awkward.
Now, Geordi is one of those characters, and I don't know, I guess I'm interested. I don't know if I have an opinion, so hopefully y'all do. He has a wishful thought. In other words, no. You have all these characters who like had something about them, and you know we saw it all 7 years. And then in the movies, they started to fulfill these wishes, and I'm like, did we need to? And so, you know, whether it's the emotion chip or whether it's whatever, but with Geordi, he finally
getting
got
married.
The implants. He got the implants. And so I was like, did we want that? I mean, I don't know. It was, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I have to say about that I, you know, last 2 weeks ago, we did our Encounter at Farpoint episode. And very clearly early on in that episode, the very first episode of TNG, Crusher gives him two options. She says that I can give you painkillers for you know, all of the side effects. Or
it'll interfere with how the visor works, doctor.
Right. Or we can do exploratory surgery. So within 8 to 10 years between Encounter at Farpoint and First Contact, I feel like it's reasonable that medical science has advanced far enough that Geordi should be able to replace the visor. That makes total sense to me. I think that's not wish fulfillment. That's continuity to me.
Daniel, you're forgetting season 2 when he visited another doctor who said, "Oh, Geordi, I can solve all of your problems." Really? Yeah. Is that do you want me to just get rid of the visor and give you implants and get rid of all the pain and you can see perfectly? Let me think about it, Doc. I'll get back to you in 7 years.
Well, I don't remember if she says that he could see perfectly, but I think I thought I remember it was something along the lines of whatever she could give him, it wouldn't be as good as the visor. Like, even though the visor hurt and it was exterior, like, the technology wasn't quite there until, like, First Contact where, okay, now they're inside my head and I got baby blues, you know, and... We'll just, you know, I don't know. Again, but that's a very good point. I mean, they kind of opened up a box there, and then the writers quickly shut it and shoved it in the corner.
Well, and what Daniel brought up in Encounter at Farpoint, think about it this way. I mean, and I don't think I've ever thought about it until this moment. Geordi says wearing the visor causes him pain. So for every episode of Next Generation that you see Geordi wearing his visor, he is in acute pain.
Maybe he goes back to his, you know, quarters and just like rips something's head off, you know, to de-stress at the end of the day.
No, it is like they'll, especially early on in TNG, they kind of reference it and kind of allude to it. But later on, they kind of drop it and forget about it. But no, but it is actually, I think, something that was supposed to be established in his character that they kind of just let fall by the wayside. Unfortunately, I kind of feel like that would have been an interesting kind of driving factor for him. Because imagine, like, you can see all of these things, you can do all these things, but it's intensely painful for you just to go through your day-to-day. Unfortunately, we didn't get that, but... That's
and then you have Barclay as one of your lieutenants. I mean, that's a lot of pain to have to deal with.
I'm surprised he didn't kill someone during that week of working with Barclay.
Maybe he got rid of all the other chief engineers.
Oh. Well, as Geordi has lived, you know, a very difficult life at times, you'd think that love would smile upon him. He's had a sordid amount of relationships. We have, you know, Christy Henshaw, which he kind of worked. I don't know. Didn't he have to be, like, possessed by an alien before she actually found him attractive? Yeah. So that didn't quite work. We have the holographic... footnote, I married Leia Brahms, who, you know, a great character, and I think in later non-canon books they do put them together. But then we
all
have, you know, well, not even in All Good Things. I think in the books that take place past that, he's on actually the Challenger, and Leia Brahms is with him, and Scotty, and, you know, all those characters you know and love. But, you know, and then you have Aquiel Unani, who is... I don't know, a little strange. And he, as a creeper, he's reading all of her personal logs. But what do you guys think of Geordi's tries at romance? He seemed to connect better with Guinan than any other character, you know, of the opposite sex.
Well, again, to toot my own horn, I've written an article about this called Data and
this
Geordi's
episode
love
shall now, from thenceforth, be known as the referencing everything that Philip wrote.
That's right. Now we have to get bad morals in this somehow. I basically wrote about Geordi and Data's love advice, examining both of their successes and failures. You know, I once saw an interview with LeVar Burton, and I believe it may have been on a Next Generation extra, or I just maybe making that up, but I did see, and he definitely had some strong feelings against the way it was portrayed, and he was saying that, you know, well, you know, the writers, maybe it was this whole sort of, like, you know, afraid of giving the, you know, the black man romance or something, and I mean, I don't think he was too happy with the fact that you have this guy who's smart, who's in charge, and is a total nerd geeko with the ladies, so which I could definitely see his perspective. But yeah, you know, it's sort of in world. Yeah, you see that he can't make a date. He's sort of neurotic. Whether it's the real Leah or the real Christy making those holodeck programs, or the lights and the music and the waves and it's like, dude, you know, we're kind of just like, be yourself, man. So yeah, he never got it together. Except for the holodeck, Leah.
What do you think, Daniel?
It's interesting because I don't know. Like, again, as someone who looked up to this character when I was younger, like, I was always like, oh man, I'm never going to get girls. Like, I don't understand them either, Geordi. I'm totally with you.
So did,
like,
he tell the writers, my character needs to get a girl because I'm a role model to children?
We need to give these 14-year-old boys hope.
As, you know, Picard, like, I'm a role model. Captain Picard. Geordi has a date day?
It's more of like a half hour. He has a lunch break.
You know, like, going back through and watching these episodes now, like when he's on the holodeck with the one girl there, and like he's like, we need a mandolin player on the beach.
Yeah.
You know, when it's dark out of the moonlight.
Trying too hard there, Geordi.
Yeah,
trying,
like,
too,
it's
hard.
It's like, it's hard to watch, but I have to tell you, as like an adolescent watching the show, I was like, man, like, what is he doing wrong? Like, that totally makes sense.
Scribbling
like,
notes in your composition
you
book.
You got the moves, Jordy. You got the moves. Close the deal.
You know, and I understand his frustration, like, LeVar Burton's frustration, because it's like, I do feel like they should have. Like, Leah Brahms, in my mind, is Jordy's, you know, in my head canon, it's Jordy's wife. Like, not maybe not when we saw him, but afterwards, it worked it out somehow. She got divorced or whatever.
And the books do touch on that. They actually, that's exactly what happened.
Daniel, I think you're being a little innocent about what happened here.
He was chief engineer, and then all of a sudden,
he was a homebreaker. Let's just say it. Let's just say what Jordy is, all right?
Well, whatever, whatever.
Stole the married woman from the man. That's what happened. Let's just be up front. I know your 24th century values, Daniel.
But, you know, like, so in my mind, it's like, yeah, he did kind of have, like, a 7 to 10 year rough patch. You know what I mean? Like,
I'll be in holodeck too.
You know, but right after that, what we just didn't see, like, maybe Leah Brahms was at the wedding of the Rikers, and like they struck up a conversation. And
you mean the Troys?
Yeah, the Troys. And you know, maybe it worked out for him in the end. I understand what they were going for with his character, and it makes sense in universe. I wanted to see him happy at the end of it.
I mean, if you think about it, I'm sure he's there sitting on the side looking at, wow, they won't even let Riker get in a committed relationship. I got no hope. if they won't put that character in a firm relationship, well, I'm doomed.
Not only did they never give him a wife or get him married, or give him, you know, he doesn't have to be married, but give him a stable relationship, they killed his best friend. They killed his only best friend.
Okay, well, speaking of his best friend, obviously Data, Lieutenant Commander Data, which, I mean, maybe Data was just kind of helping him out because he was two ranks below, you know, Data. I mean, do you hang out, Philip, with people who are two ranks higher than you, you know, off the clock?
They don't hang out with me. That's what it
okay,
is.
Okay, there we go. There it is. But there is definitely a special friendship. And as we've already spoken about how, you know, when we were younger and we would watch the show and we would emulate to these characters, you know, I love that friendship that they had. I mean, they're playing on the holodeck. They're, you know, Sherlock and Watson.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, flying in the face of copyright laws that they didn't realize at the time. They're like, it's the 24th century. The statutes of limitations have to have expired
way
by
way
now.
Way over at this
it
point.
It has to be public domain by now.
Yeah, it's got to be. But no, but yet Mickey Mouse still is not. but no, I mean, what do we think about Data and just his interaction with the Forge? I mean, eventually culminating in some real, you know, interaction though in like Generations.
I wonder where that was leading to.
Well, no, just with, is this in Generations. Pick? No, in Generations with his emotionship, you know, basically when Jordy is kidnapped, I mean, we can start here, but like when Jordy's kidnapped, that affects Data more than anything because that's his best friend. I mean, yeah, if it had been Riker or Troy, like with a gun to their head, he probably would have said, 50-50 chance, I'm an android. I could take him out. But Jordy, he's like, oh my gosh, you know. And yet Jordy reciprocates that back in Nemesis, where he helps Data jump ship over to the Scimitar.
Too soon.
But yeah, what'd you guys think? Daniel, what'd you think of, you know, just how they had these two paired, you know, from day one sitting next to each other in flight school?
You know, I like all Star Trek fans, I think, or at least all TNG fans, I love the Data Jordy relationship. Like, it's like, you know, in the most manly way possible, it's adorable.
Romance.
Right? It's a very early example of what we get, you know, later on, you know, it is the Spock Kirk relationship of TNG, you know, it's
That's
this
true.
Kind of like super close friendship that you can have, you know, I love every aspect of it. And I know I know Philip has watched the show, and I don't, you know, I don't know if you have Darren or not, but anybody should check out all of the Community references that there are to, you know, Community kind of builds another relationship based on the Data Geordi relationship.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
It's also wonderful. But, you know, it's just like from the first episode where, you know, even in the first season or two,
Geordi and Data in the morning,
in the first season or two, we don't really get a sense of it. Just, I think it's something that kind of organically grew out of the crew and out of the cast and out of the writing. Like, it was just, it wasn't anything I don't think they planned on from the start, but it's like, if you watch From Encounter at Farpoint to Nemesis, it's like, it's one of the strongest character relationships that come out of the Next Generation. And I love every aspect of it.
No, their family, their brothers. I mean, a blind man teaching an android to see, that's got to be worth something in someone's book.
But it's almost like the computer and the tricorder that are friends, basically. But yeah, because I think, you know, Data needs an interpreter or a translator. Like, what is that? And Geordi's like, I got it for you, Data. This is what's going on. You know,
to
this
snoop,
is the joke. This is
to yeah. move covertly,
pants
to slink
down. you know, and Geordi is just too happy to kind of take Data through his hand in hand, hold his hand through his quest through humanity and all that stuff. But yeah, it's very good because they also bounce off each other. You know, Data's trying to be like, I don't, you know, this girl just made out with me. What do I do? And Geordi's like, well, you know, it depends. Is she kind of getting off a relationship and all this? But then, you know, Geordi also goes to Data too. And so, yeah, it's definitely, because I think for a lot of the Star Trek characters and the Next Generation characters, they're in some ways at very lonely positions. Cause like Geordi is the chief engineer. So he's the guy in charge. And he's not going to, you know, hang around with the captain of their first officer.
I mean, there's three people who have higher clearance than him, Data being one.
Exactly. You know, and I think of the list of murder suspects, it's always them. Like, who could have possibly done this technical thing? Well, it's either Geordi or Data or the butler.
Or the butler. I mean, the bridge can't be that clean all the time without a butler.
Exactly.
Or a fleet of Roombas.
but yeah, it's definitely, you know, like you said, sort of for the Niners, sort of like the O'Brien, Bashir, the Kirk, Spock, the Kim, Paris. Ooh, actually knew that one.
Yeah,
or the
Kim
Trip,
Paris, yeah.
Or the Trip, Malcolm. You know, so
Reed.
So yeah, it's definitely a good thing.
And that's true, like you guys said, I mean, because we know that they meet for the first time at Encounter, so we're seeing this friendship form from the very beginning, whereas, like, Troy obviously already knew, you know, Riker and,
M'Zadi.
You know, and Picard. Do you remember how I told you we could have
right.
secret conversations?
Say it right. Do you remember how we told you?
Why do I still have an accent in my head? Because I'm not speaking, and technically you shouldn't have accents if you're talking telepathically. I'm just saying. Yeah, that's.
I'm sorry, Darren. Apparently, you just don't understand the M'Zadi relationship.
Oh, I don't.
It's true.
I don't.
Neither did Geordi.
No, he didn't. But you know, I would say that I think Data or I think Geordi would put together a much better bachelor party for Riker than Data ever would.
So here's a question. What kind of novels does Geordi write? Do we know? Like are they like you know, romance novels? Is he writing sort of the 24th century Fabio covers? Because they never talk about what it is.
Well, remember, no one writes. They only make holonovels. So if you can't program a holodeck, you're worth nothing.
I have to say, and full disclosure here, people, the only Star Trek book I've ever read, ever.
Ship of the Line, right? Because
I have not.
Was it after you watched Justice?
Justice!
No, it's not. Was a young adult children's, you know, / preteen novel about, I think there was, I don't know if it was a whole series, I assume it was because this was the only one I had, but there was a, you know, like a, the Academy years.
Yes, the Cadet
TNG.
Series.
The yeah, Cadet yeah. series, okay, thank you.
Yeah, I remember reading the Worf one, I think.
Yeah, the only one I ever read, and I probably read it close to 10 times because I thought it was such a good book, was the Geordi, you know, he's in the Academy years and he plays Capture the Flag. And that, like, that's like the big crux of the novel. So I figured this would be the perfect time to point that out. And it was an amazing, like, if any of our listeners know the name of that book, please let me know, because I will buy that book right now.
The Cadet series, Geordi LaForge. I think it out there.
You know, we should do a crossover with Literary Treks and talk about the Cadet TNG series.
I would love to talk about that book, because I read it at least 10
times. If there's any
times.
Book we're going
to
be talking about when we cross over with Literary Treks, I think
maybe
we
I could do
book
the novelization of Justice.
Justice?
No, there's real justice in this world, so that doesn't exist. Oh, well, guys, it's been a lot of fun talking about Geordi LaForge today, but it's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The Enterprise.
Because if you break it down, you've got a flying saucer with rockets. It's everything that he was trying to avoid, but it's so much more than that.
He found a way to make a flying saucer with rockets make sense.
Earl Grey.
Encounter at Farpoint.
The alien ship is literally shooting at and killing colonists on the planet, and he's like...
I haven't had my talk-to-talk with Beverly yet.
The Ready Room.
Star Trek continues.
Even on just seeing a corridor wall, you'll see, like, there's just a slash of red against the wall. That's a stylistic choice that they were making in that era. So Matt has a great eye while we're shooting a scene.
The Orb.
The full NDS9.
It's a milestone in the Cliff Bowl directing of Star Trek and Deep Space Nine. Defiant marks the final non-appearance of Sirach Glofton in a Cliff Bowl directed episode.
To the journey!
Innocence Rewrite.
We'll use a deflector dish to emit a tachyon beam, fire a few photon torpedoes, blow up the anomaly of the week, and then we'll just fly off into space like we do at the end of every week.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Remembering Cliff Bull with Larry Nemechek.
But the thing about Cliff personally was, that I'll always remember, and it comes through in this transcript, he's a pretty plain-spoken guy. And he would call a spade a spade. And what's your rating on this podcast? Are you pretty much up to
Warp 5?
Prequel design.
Or just, you know, for the sake of the actors, so they felt like in the design people, they felt like this was a real place that people would believe. And I just really appreciate that.
Literary Treks.
John Jackson Miller, Absent Enemies.
And of course, the larger thing about the whole phasing thing is it allowed me to tell a story that I think had a Star Trek feel to it, with regard to the issue of war and peace.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream them from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory to get all the links. Well, we have some great feedback, guys. Someone navigated through our website and clicked on that tab on the right like we told them to and sent us a great email from Jason Sorensen. So he writes, whenever the Trek saga has showcased any crossover elements, it was always a unique and fun sight to see. The same is very much true for the Trek FM family of shows. Compliments to Daniel, Darren, and Philip for partnering with the Intrepid to the journey.
To the journey!
For a quintessential quandary on the Q continuum. Wow, that's a lot of Qs there. Here's to hoping you go for the trifecta and partner up with the Orb for a quick collaboration. Oh, hear
to
that,
the
Chris?
Orb.
He was to in, the Orb. Q was in there.
Q is in there, although I think we're Q'd out at this point. But so thank you, Jason, for your feedback. If you'd like to share your thoughts on today's Earl Grey, just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show. That option on the side, choose Earl Grey, and that'll come to all three of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and other listeners on our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Also, please let us know how we're doing by leaving an iTunes review. That will help other listeners find our show here in 2014. Before we go, I'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Earl Grey to you each week. Our sponsor for this week is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers, and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World. Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. And we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. And lastly, there's one more way that you can directly help us keeping Earl Grey coming to you each week, and that's by adopting some aliens. Well, illustrations of aliens, anyway. If you can go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on our website. They're available in both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels that you can choose from. Just let us know what you would like and in what format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate. And your support helps us to pay for the costs of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. Now, Philip, if someone was wanting to discuss with you, you know, this whole visor, you know, fashion statement of the 24th century, where would they find you?
Well, I mean, I think definitely I might take my glasses off if I ever have to look at any classified material, just in case, because maybe Google Glass is controlled by the Romulans. They can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina.
And Daniel, if someone is interested in your patented barrel roll technique, how would they reach you about that?
Well, of course, they could reach me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
And if someone would like to discuss talking about BFFs in space, like Lieutenant Commander Data and Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge, they can find me on Twitter. I am at Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. Well, I think I'm going to read some of those notes you left me, Daniel, on barrel roll tactics, because I tried in the simulator the other week, and let's just say that coolant leaks don't do really good things for your hair. Okay. It's dyed and it's falling out. So make sure if you're going to barrel roll, you do it right. And you tuck and you twist right in that right motion. It's really important. I think honestly, that's what got him the job. So, but it's been real fun discussing, you know, barrel roll tactics and Geordi. Live long and prosper.
Make it so.
Engage.
Fire.
Butterfly in the sky.
I can go twice as high. It's in a
take a book. Reading rainbow.
Reading rainbow.